Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. I picked a story called The Frog King by Garth Greenwell. It's published in 2018. We had no plans in Venice, had done no research, but it didn't matter. Just to be there was enough. Amid the capillary water and sinking stone, there was a kind of uniform beauty to everything, a blanket wonder. Every corner we turned made our gasp. Every church we stepped into, every statue with its marbled frothed up like surf, like the involutions of thought. Fuck these people, R whispered as we stared at a painted ceiling. Fuck them for getting to live in a place like this. He was smiling when I glanced at him, but I knew he meant it, or half meant it. He often said that he was born in the wrong place. Shitty Portugal, he would say. Shitty Algarve. The shitty Azores, shitty Lisbon. It should all have been different. His life was fucked. Sometimes I could bring him out of these moods. I could kiss him and say he had a new life now, his life with me. Who knew where we'd end up in Europe or America? Who knew what adventures we'd have? And sometimes he pushed me away or turned his face from mine. We don't get to choose anything, he'd say then. We think we do, but it's an illusion. We're insects. We get stepped on or we don't. That's all. When he talked like this, there was nothing I could do. Anything I did made it worse, whether I got angry or sad or tried to make him feel my own happiness, the happiness I felt so often just looking at him as he slept or read or stared into the screen of his laptop. It was an immovable force, this mood that descended on him sometimes, and I worried that it was descending on him now, that it would darken the rest of our day, but it didn't descend. When we left the church and turned blindly around the next corner, he pulled me into a little alcove and kissed me, his hands on the sides of my face. I can't believe I'm here, he said. It's like a movie. I'm in Venice with my American boyfriend. He laughed. My sister would be so jealous. She always wanted an American boyfriend, and I got one first. And then he was off again, dragging me by the hand behind him. He did this repeatedly, pulling me into doorways and alleys to kiss me, always somewhere a little apart. Though we were still noticed, people passing would stare at us or look decidedly away. One heavy old man scowled, a young couple laughed, which I minded more. R seemed not to notice, but I noticed. It was a weird reversal. He was the more open one here, and I was hyper aware, feeling the reflexes of fear, though I wasn't afraid. I didn't think I was afraid. Yeah, I forget how I found this, just like looking on whatever list, and I didn't know what I was gonna read when I finally picked it, but I kind of liked it. I ended up reading some criticism of the piece, which said that it was not criticism, but reviews, right, by readers.
Reactions, responses.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like some literary critic went into this, and if they did, I didn't read it. But some of the critiques I was reading were from people that were saying, like, nothing happened. There was no conflict. And I thought that was a weird way
Interesting.
to think of it, because I think that it is more of like a meditation on a conflict that for this gay couple is ever present. Like, the conflict for them is that they don't feel like they can be happy where they are, and they don't know where they can be next. And so the conflict is like this dark cloud. And I think part of it is illustrated in the section I read, where R, the boyfriend, is a little more prone to the negativity that like overcomes him when he thinks too much about this, right? They're supposed to be enjoying this vacation, and for the most part they do, but it's talking about how even in their young love, which is the honeymoon phase, it's happy for them, it's still tainted somehow. And it's both like their physical circumstances, where they live, where they think they want to be, right? They don't know what the future holds for them as like individuals, but they also just like don't feel comfortable all the time, like where they get to be totally happy. And like you said before we started recording, this paragraph kind of hints at maybe some like actual conflict or like something bad about to happen. Like, and I read that story kind of wondering, I mean, is this going to be a thing where R gets killed, right? Because it
Yes.
felt like that
Yeah.
kind of intense foreboding. They're in a strange country. They're doing things they don't do in their normal, where they normally live, right? They're expressing a lot of PDA and all this kind of stuff. And, the narrator is saying, like, I was usually the one that was like worried about this, but, or I was usually the one that was like affectionate, and here it was reversed, and that made him even more uncomfortable. And it's like, yeah, you just feel this like tension, I feel like throughout.
That's so funny. Sorry,
I
go ahead.
know. I know. I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is, I think what they meant was that it didn't come to a head in the way that maybe you expected. And we talked a lot in our last episode about expectations, right? Like, if you kind of introduce this, maybe you're reading it to the end where you think that something bad will happen. And instead, what ends up happening happening, I think, in this story is maybe more like an exercise of really good writing. And that's why it worked for me. But there's this like scene at the end where it's just this very intimate scene. It's not even like sexual, where the narrator is like kissing R, his boyfriend, all over his body. And it, like the way it's written, it takes its time and he's taking his time. And by the end, his boyfriend's crying. And it's because it's like one of the most like intimate, sort of like honest, kind things it sounds like that someone had done. And
Well, he's also just saying like an incantation, I love you, I love you. And like at first he's like, yeah, and then finally he's just like, oh man, you
accepts it.
feel it.
Yeah. And there's even like talk in that section about how, you know, when you repeat words too much, like they lose their meaning, but then they don't
Yeah.
even sound like themselves, but then they adapt like a new meaning. I feel like
They
I've read
found that
this.
meaning again. He like rediscovers it in the middle.
And it's deeper and it's like more important now because you actually had to like let it wash over you that many times. So I felt like this was just like a beautiful piece. And maybe anyone that thinks that nothing happened would call this more of like a vignette, like a scene. Because I do think what it's doing is like capturing like a tone. I think that's what it does best. I'll remember it for the scene. And I feel like it captures something that was like honest and real for them.
I was kind of thinking of it as a portrait,
Okay, sure.
but a portrait is static. And I, just like last episode, I was thinking about trying to figure out what defines or what manifests what John Gardner called profluence, the forward momentum. And I was like, what keeps me going in this story is a conflict. It is like an underlying kind of worry over something.
Yes, yes.
Because you get to the end of the first section, and he's like, he says, I finally felt like a person. Like, I felt like the line is actually, I felt like part of the human race, right?
Yes.
And then this whole thing is like, it's about them finding like something meaningful and important between the two of them.
Right.
I didn't even know that they were like boyfriends until the second section when we wouldn't
Same.
ever be boyfriends who wore the same clothes. And like that felt like a ratcheting up, right? It's like now it's not just any kind of relationship. It's like one that's problematic in society. And then when he's doing all these, you said PDAs, like he's like flaunting, not flaunting, but like he wants to be in this relationship and like show the world this relationship. That felt like a ratcheting up because it felt like it's something that he's flirting with losing, right?
Right.
And then that last scene, I mean, it keeps going like that, but there's always this underlying worry. Like one of the things that I was worried about for them throughout the story that kept me going, that forward momentum, what became was they're going to lose this. Something's going to happen to make them lose this. Nothing
Right.
happens to make them lose it. But the last
Right.
scene is like he's going back to Portugal and like the relationship's going to end and the whole thing with the
Right.
Frog King being burned and you have to like celebrate what just ended, but prepare yourself for the next thing is like part of like even that ritual with eating the raisins, like
Yeah.
you have to remember what was great. They are losing it at the end. They're losing the
Right.
relationship. So the whole thing is like this reminiscence, not a reminiscence, but a kind of contemplation of how absolutely wonderful their love was or has been for them and how much they don't want to lose it, but knowing that they're going to, right?
Right.
Which is why he's weeping at the end there. Anyway, I felt like there was a lot of, and call it conflict. I think conflict is the wrong way to, like we talked about in the last episode, the wrong way to analyze stories. The thing that is profluence isn't always conflict, but it's something that keeps you moving through it. And there's definitely that here. There's definitely that tension. There's definitely like things being tightened and like drawn taut so that you're like pushed forward like a slingshot or rubber band or something.
Right. I feel like the premise here even is part of that driving force, which is the idea that they're on a vacation. And I feel like anytime a couple goes on vacation, we also have like a framework of like things being happy and good and exciting and things getting like stressful and tense and even potentially dangerous. But like that was enough for me to keep reading. I knew that we were like looking at them on a trip. So it's like trips always end. And for me, I was reading to see how it ended, right? Like maybe this would have worked less, or maybe that whoever read it and felt that there wasn't a whole lot of conflict, didn't understand that this wasn't just a snapshot of their relationship. It was their relationship out of context, right? Like in a different setting. And that alone is like a stress and a conflict, whether or not it ends poorly. It's like the first time you travel with someone you're dating, you know? Will we kill each other? Will we miss our flight? Or will it end in us apparently kissing each other for hours in a non-sexual way? So I don't know. There was enough of, like you said, that momentum just with the premise.
Yeah, like a lot of that stuff, it's not a conflict between them, but there's that they're trying to enjoy what they have, enough, but R is very sour in his reaction to people, right? And so there's like that kind of like that's why he's always being so demonstrative. Like he's trying to hold on to something. You could it's like this underlying kind of like really understated conflict, if you will, in his personality, in his like character, in like how he is in this relationship. Like that sourness versus just the wonderful thing they have together, like is a conflict, but it's small, it's understated, it's very little. But it is also part of what pushes you forward. It's part of the whole problem of like they could lose this.
I feel like there's probably always like someone in the relationship that's a little more pessimistic for whatever reason too, and that is a conflict in and of itself. Like the section that I read, he talks about like anticipating these moods and what he normally has to do about them, and I was like kind of tiptoeing, like, and it's not this like hugely negative thing where he's like, I'm gonna dump R because he's negative, but he's kind of like, he's just like so in touch with it that like I feel like this author was also like capturing something that like is very relatable, right? So maybe that's why I enjoyed reading it so much. And but he was doing it like in a really good way. I thought the writing was strong throughout. I could picture his own like tensions and everything. Just that section in particular where he's like, these moods descend on him and there's only so much I can do to get him out of it. That's a conflict too.
Yeah, I don't know whoever this reviewer was, I think missed something.
Oh yeah, don't worry. But it wasn't, there were other ones that was like, not a whole lot happened. I was like, no, like not a whole lot of plot happened, but there's a whole lot going on. I would call this like a relatively quiet story, you know? Yeah, we burn a frog at the end, but that's kind of unrelated, right?
That's a symbol. That's like, pulling out of the romantic, the 19th century kind of like, let's put a symbol in there.
It's otherwise like a very muted, quiet, gray story where they're just kind of like drifting around Europe together, kissing a lot in alleyways. There's this like mounting dread that this is about to end. So it's not this like loud, exciting thing where lots takes place, but I feel like there's still a lot going on. I think I'm also just personally very partial to stories like this where there isn't a ton of plot. There's not like, if I was going to describe this to someone, I would say it's about a gay couple on vacation and how they're stressed about leaving because it's going to be hard for them.
Yeah, the last episode we were talking about how, or I was talking about, but making that profluence is very, very plot motivated, right? But this one is more character situation. It's a different kind of motivation for that momentum. And I think it's a good thing to remind ourselves that it doesn't have to be one thing. It doesn't have to be conflict. Like I said last time, there are other motivators that move stories forward. And like you call it a quiet story, there's quiet motivators. There's like kind of a tension that can be over the entire thing that kind of like pushes each section. And there are small incremental adjustments that increase that as you go. Like every time he talked about doing like kissing each other out in the open, he would mention that people would look at them. And like you could feel that as a tension. They're trying to hang, like grab onto this relationship so strongly, but those details introduce the idea that they could lose it. And it's subtle, but it's there. It's always there and it's always being ratcheted.
Yeah, that is a good point to make that not all types of momentum have to be plot driven. There can still be something where here it's almost like there's power plays. And not that these two are like fighting that way, but like you said, it's like when different personalities are just presented on the page, that's enough of a momentum. I guess like momentum, like what we're talking about too, is just like, do I care enough about what is about to happen? Am I asking myself what happens next? Like, do I care? And I do care whether or not I think that there's going to be a frog set on fire or like a shooting or, you know, like aliens land or these two have some kind of a fight. Like, do I care enough to keep reading? Am I wondering what happens next?
One thing I was curious, I was wondering if he was gonna, like you said a while ago, kind of expect him to get killed or something, expect a hate crime. But it does, that underlies everything in this. But that's a plot thing. You can also have that tension outside of that.
I can't remember if you said it in this episode or the last one. I think it was the last one because it like kind of was all in this like conversation about momentum. But we talk about this too like all the time. Like, what makes you keep reading a story when it's not assigned to you type thing? Like if I didn't have to read a lot of the stories that I read, would I keep going? I mean, even for certain podcast stories that we've given to each other, I know that they're a good story. And I know that like you wouldn't give me shit to read. And the same goes for myself. I wouldn't like pick a story I didn't want to read, you know? But there is something where you're kind of like forcing yourself in some stories. And I think it sometimes is because it's not immediately clear what I need to be paying attention to in terms of caring about. What am I supposed to be asking asking myself when it comes to like what happens next. And so there's certain stories that are slow moving that way. They like lay a scene out and you're just kind of like, what am I supposed to be paying attention to? What am I supposed to be worrying about? We see that a lot in like amateur writing where someone will spend a lot of time with details at the beginning and then those kind of go to the wayside because they think they're setting a scene, but what they forget is that like, I don't really care about the scene. I care about what I'm supposed to be like paying attention to. These are like red herring details, right? These are not pertinent to anything. Like, oh, she sat on a bench and her hair was auburn and the flowers were red. And it's like, what? Well, okay, cool. But like, does this come back? You know, like I'm like expending a lot of like energy on like the wrong thing. So I feel like stories that are like slow moving in terms of like telling us what our expectations should be are the ones that are like hard to get into. And like the ones that like give you momentum in terms of like, this is what to pay attention to are the ones that I'm like sort of immediately gripped by. Whether or not I care about the genre, about the plot itself, I'll keep reading if it's clear sort of from the beginning what it is this writer wants me to pay attention to.
Yeah.
So like for this one, I would argue this one is like sort of slow moving that way. But quickly enough, I'm at least in it because I'm curious to know what happens. It's probably when he mentions that it's his boyfriend, honestly, because how many stories do we get about gay love that aren't all ending in like hate crimes or something, you know, or like aren't told like from an outsider's perspective?
Yeah.
So I was like interested. I was like, oh, cool. Like this is different for sure. I'm going to keep reading. And maybe it's just about their personalities. I recently reread like Bolt to the Brain. And that one starts with like a bank robbery. And that's a great way to just get me asking myself, oh, I wonder what happens next. Like what happens next? Not what's the point of the story, but what happens next? I care what happens next immediately. So that's why we talk all the time about like starting a story, a novel, especially with action, not the primary conflict necessarily, but action. That's how you get a reader into a story quickly. And the action is like what a lot of times I think gives that momentum. It's like, I'm wondering what happens next. I'm not wondering to myself, what's the point of this fucking story? I'm just kind of like, oh, this is good enough right now. Let's get to the next section. Let's get to the next section. I'm having a good enough time.
I always thought the action thing, it doesn't have to start off as James Bond, you know,
right?
Like,
yes.
In like action hero kind
that's,
of
yeah. Stuff. It's a terrible word that way. It has such a connotation. Yeah.
But it's just the character doing something, the character yeah. in action. And what that introduces us to is the character and his or her world. And that's what becomes interesting is like once you right. give us a character doing something, being themselves, whatever that looks like, it could be literally sitting and reading a book. But if that's what makes the character interesting, that's what we become interested in.
Right. Yeah. Action does not have to be like you said, like loud or exciting, but like show us something happening. That's why I think like this story kind of gets off to like a slow start in terms of like me asking myself, why am I reading? What do I think is about to kind of unfold here? But here's another little trick for you. If you're a good enough writer, I'll keep reading because a lot of times yeah. what I love about literary fiction and what I feel like I've so poorly described when I talk about like writing that I enjoy or like what I'm looking for is like, am I enjoying the way these sentences like tickle my brain and my head when I'm reading them? And yeah, I am. This was a good example of that. I'm like, I don't know where this is going, but like, I feel like I'm in the hands of a talented writer either way. And I think we probably don't realize it, but there's probably certain writers like Stephen King, who if he wasn't Stephen King, wouldn't get every single story that he ever wrote published. But you're still, you know what I mean? Like he's created a name for himself. He can do no wrong now. But there are writers like that who, when you read their stuff, even if it's like not your favorite Stephen King story, consciously or subconsciously, the writing itself is doing something that your brain likes. It's easy enough to read. And it's like, oh, I'm just kind of like floating along here. Like maybe by the end, I'm like, I liked it better. But you're still like in the hands of a capable writer. So whether or not that writer lands every time, there's a momentum too, I think, in what is like the artistic rendering of it.
Yeah, I felt like I treated this story unfairly a little bit in that I was thinking about momentum before I started it.
Yeah.
It's become a question I'm really curious about is like, what keeps me reading? Because this is the point of the podcast is I want to learn how to write better. So right. I want to learn how to write stories that will keep people reading. What is the ingredient? What is the key to that? So I started reading this story with that in mind. And so I was marking every moment when I was like, this is ratcheting. This is a moment of ratcheting for me as a reader. It could be different for other people, but like these were the moments and I marked them. And one of them was the first word boyfriends. Like when that popped up, I was like, I'm interested.
Right.
Because there is automatically a tension there. I didn't mark the first section. Well, the last line of it I did mark because like I finally felt like a member of the human race.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question that it raises, right?
Right.
Because a lot of stories like this, like I think you we could find 1,000 stories of literary quality in The New Yorker, in anthologies, best American fiction, to start with some couple in a quiet moment where one is ruminating on what the other one did. And it's not big, it's small. It's like as simple as getting up early to put the Christmas presents under the tree. And like, that's something that happened. And that's an interesting thing for their relationship. And that introduces whatever spools out afterwards. And it's not always obvious if it's going to be a quiet portrait like this, relatively quiet portrait, or if it's going to be some roller coaster mayhem action sequence, right?
Yeah. Maybe it is unfair to frame, like you said, you were already thinking about a moment. I'm like, because this is like a bad example for this story.
Yeah. No, but it has it. Still has it. I was still drawn forward.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, yeah, maybe that's even a better way to describe it. Like momentum, not in the sense that it builds to something, but that you're still pulled forward. Like inertia. What's the opposite of inertia? Movement. It has movement.
Oh, inertia is movement and stillness. Inertia is holding state. It's Newton's first law. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion. Objects at rest tend to stay at rest. That's inertia.
This is like what you were describing in our last episode. And I was like, yeah, I was definitely thinking about that when I was trying.
This is a metaphor, of course. We're all good at metaphors here on this writing podcast, right?
I think it feels like, at least in my head, that I'm continuing to like simplify the definition of things like conflict, things like momentum, things like expectations, because it really is at the bare minimum, like, do I want to keep reading? So what is that? I'm moving forward. I think you said it probably as simply as it can be. Like, do I want to keep moving forward for whatever reason? That's like what you're trying to do at the beginning of the story. And so things like action is a tool for that, or even just getting into a conflict like right away. And then, like I said, it's not like a real cheat because you really have to have the skill. But if you're writing anything well enough, I'll stick along probably until you do introduce that conflict. Sometimes it's intentional and sometimes it's just kind of like, oops, you got me by accident. I don't even think you thought that this is why I would keep reading. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
There's some really bad writing where you're like, yes. How bad can this get?
Oh, yeah. Like some people, they think like, oh, well, they finished it. They must have really liked it. I'm like, well, I hate to break it to you, but I hate listening to about half of the content I consume.
Oh, man.
I mean, I also ruined the tone of this podcast by bringing up that immediate criticism that I read. But like, I like to read that kind of stuff about this kind of a story afterwards because it was quiet. So I was kind of wondering, like, what do people think of this? You know, it wasn't that I wanted to like read someone's bad take on it. I was kind of trying to figure out, like, why would other people have finished it? Because it is quiet. And did they love it by the end, that scene, at least like I did, you know? But I guess by the end, what I'll remember of the story is that long paragraph where he's trailing kisses all over R. And like we said, it goes from like, I don't want to do this, to like, oh my God, what's happening? And then it's like this very powerful emotional scene. That's the best part of the story, right? That's like what we're leading to. And I think my takeaway is kind of like, I wonder if he, as the writer, had an idea for that kind of a scene first and then kind of engineered a story around it, maybe. It doesn't matter either way. But I think I sometimes will have an idea for what I want, like an emotional scene to feel like. Not emotional in the sense that you're crying, but like I have an idea for like whatever it is I want to evoke.
Like anger or fear or whatever it is. Yeah.
Whatever it is. And like maybe it's drawn out in this sense too. Maybe he had the idea for this exact scene and even some of the what would have led to it. But that's enough to be a climax for a story if you do it right. And I think sometimes a danger is that we think that just like an emotional note, making the reader feel something, is not enough for a story. And then we'll over-engineer a plot somehow. So I think the criticism of this is, not that everyone is saying that, but at least that type of a criticism is undeserved if the story can accomplish this kind of like reaction emotionally from the reader, because they did it. They didn't need to have Michael Bay explosions either. So does the story need to have that kind of like gripping momentum where it's like propelling you forward, where it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? No, it doesn't, because still by the end, I felt something. That's what I like about most writing, is if I feel something. I don't often read something and think, oh, that was so clever, I definitely want to read that more. Like, you know what I mean? Some people, I think, like that kind of stuff. I don't. I really like the stuff that you feel stuff.
Yeah.
Even like your most popular book that you can think of that everybody's kind of read. Even in I'm trying to think of like big name stories, like I don't know, Slaughterhouse-Five. Like maybe you're gonna sit here and tell me about aliens and time being a circle and all this kind of stuff. Like that's cool, right. But those are all the vehicle for the emotional takeaway, which is like so it goes, which is like dealing with trauma and how you get through it and enjoy things anyway. You know what I mean? It's like I think people get upset about stories that they can't describe in terms of plot because we're so bad at describing our emotional reaction to something. So when they see a story like this, they want to just miss it as not a full story somehow. But the story can still be about just that. It can just be about the emotional takeaway. It doesn't have to be about what happens plot.
Yeah, that's kind of similar to my takeaway as well. And my
Sure, I
takeaway,
believe you.
obvious. Well, it's
You're like, that's kind of like mine. I'm just kidding.
my takeaway because it's I like I said, I started thinking about this. I entered the story thinking about momentum and what was going to keep me in it. And like you mentioned, like this seems like an unfair way to approach the story, right? Because it isn't an obvious one, but it did still keep me interested. And I read this pretty quickly and I was really into it. And that just shows that even just emotional interest can be a driver, right? Finding out how things are going to turn out, just how much they loved each other was interesting, right? And like culminating with that last scene when they're able to just confront their feelings for each other and feel them like so fully. Like how many times throughout the story, part of the tension is he stopped and he kissed me in public and people were watching. And I'm not fully engaged in the moment because I'm worried about the people watching. And now at the end, I'm fully engaged in the moment. That's a culmination. That's an ending. That's a place to arrive at. So yeah, the things that keep us reading don't have to be questions of information or questions of like, will he succeed at like climbing the mountain or like doing the thing? They can be as simple as emotional questions like, will I feel the feeling? That's a weird way to phrase it, but
Can I feel love? Yeah. And I think the smartest thing I said in this podcast was what I said 2 seconds ago. I think, at least for me, that it feels like a little bit of a revelation, like that maybe we dismiss these kinds of stories because we lack the ability to fully describe them. You know,
yeah.
it was a quiet story, but I felt something. I don't like, how do you pitch that to someone?
That's one of the problems with the way we talk about writing and like craft is we do boil everything down to the idea of conflict. And so a reviewer is going to come at it and say, well, it's a conflict. It's like if conflict feels bigger than thing that was actually in the story that is interesting about the story that keeps us reading the story and makes us feel the ending, it's not exactly conflict. It's something else, but that is still there and it is still momentum. It's inertial and it's a force.
Yeah, it's like, isn't it enough to like ruminate on an idea to like capture it fully? Like, I feel like that's like what a lot of writing I've identified with over the years has been about. It's kind of like you circle a line on a page and you're like, I know what this feels like, but I've never seen it articulated. Like, I'm reading to like identify with like other people that have felt this or think this or whatever.
That's such a fascinating thing because you circle the line and then 10 years later, you come back and you read that line. It doesn't have the same punch
Oh
because it
no.
requires everything that came before it because there is such a thing as momentum in a story.
It's like when you buy a used book and you see someone else's notes, you're like,
Why did you circle that?
yeah, they were having a fucking moment. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.